Content people tend to be a nervous bunch. We write in darkness, surrounded by books, shrouded in mystery. A lot of us, or at least me, picked content roles precisely so that I would never have to speak in public. The problem is, on rare and horrible occasions, content writers and editors are well informed and can maybe provide value and should probably share that value with other people, in public, in person. Shockingly aware of that fact, the Charity Digital content team embarked on a journey of learning. We wanted to improve our delivery on podcasts, you can be the judge of that, and we wanted to ensure our webinar presentations were clear and concise and confident. Was that confident? We wanted to, like, minimize the likes and stop saying and we wanted to improve our vocal landscapes and stop the endless upspeak. We wanted to work on our pauses, like that one. We wanted to improve our presentation styles, our presence on stage, and everything else. Basically, we wanted to become better speakers. So we took some training, we did lots of reading, we even filmed ourselves practicing, all in the pursuit of better public speaking. And today we want to discuss everything we've learned. I'm Johan Mark Jones, and I'm joined by Laura Stanley and Josie Sparling, and we are the Charity Digital content team, talking about the things we've learned. So I'm going to start by asking about just like the tricks and hacks and stuff like that that we kind of picked up during our discovery learning journey, I think. Laura, do you want to kick us off with some of the things you learned? And we in the first question, we'll particularly think about discussion topics, you know, like panel discussions rather than, you know, public speaking presentations, which we'll get onto later.
May I just congratulate you, Johan, on an excellent introduction. Well spoken, I would say. So I would just want to caveat this because I'm feeling a lot of pressure for this podcast, is that this is a sort of different type of public speaking. It's going to be more, as you say, discussion based and everything like that. So if it goes wrong, please don't be like, why are they talking to us about public speaking? Because there's lots of different types of public speaking. The big thing for me was confidence, because I think that when there's a big meeting, for example, which is a type of public speaking in and of itself, because it's not, well, we were talking about this before the podcast started, and Josie quite rightly was like, well, it's not private, is it? So trying to feel more confident in what I'm talking about. And that's always when I think I sound better, but it's trying to get to the confident part first. And actually, one of the things that was told to me during the our workshop, we had a workshop at the London Speech Workshop.
Yeah,
they were so great.
Thoroughly recommend you.
They're so helpful. And I really embarrassed myself because when the coach was explaining it to me, I said, oh, that's in Ted Lasso, but it is. Do a power pose, go take yourself off somewhere. Don't just do it in the office, presumably. And just go and do a, you know, draw yourself up to the biggest you can possibly be. And it helps you feel really confident beforehand. I haven't done it for this podcast, so apologies. But
that's why she's flailing.
But it's so, I do think I have used it before and it is really helpful, I think, just to get you out of your funk or out of your own head, I think. So that's a tip from me on just feeling confident. But there's other tips, such as I'm really, really bad with filler words, as I'm sure you can tell in this sentence. I'm sure I've used no end of them. But there were lots of different tricks that our coach taught us at this workshop, including mozzarella-ing, which is when you stretch your conjunction word. So you might use it like, and just to fill in the gaps, because I think people use filler words when, well, I do it certainly when I'm feeling like my thought isn't complete and I just need to, a bit of time to think about it. But what was really interesting to me was our coach at the workshop said that you're asking people to edit when they're listening to you. So your point will never come across as strongly. Because people just hear the in between what you're saying. Yeah. And it dilutes your point, basically. And also you could use gestures to do that sort of filling the gap thing. I'm using gestures quite a lot in this office right now.
She's swearing at me right now.
But just to show that your point is coming, give yourself that time to think. Because being a slow speaker is not a bad thing either.
No.
Not a bad thing either. I don't know why I went really slow on that last point.
That's not mozzarella at all.
No, it's not. I thought those tips were really helpful. And once I was aware of my filler words, I do think that helps me. The first podcast we did after I learned about the filler words, I was the best I've ever sounded. It's not.
Yeah, she's regressed somewhat since.
I have. But it is really helpful to be aware of them, I think, and know that there are ways of getting around them. It's not forever that I will be saying like.
I mean, on that, I found my problems were quite related to what you ended on there, which was I was too fast. I should slow down. I was too fast. I didn't pause and I had a poor vocal landscape. It's quite hard to walk into a room and someone accuse you of having a poor vocal landscape, but nonetheless. And it's interesting because it's not something I thought of prior to that. I thought in weird ways, I felt that it was not a gift. That sounds ridiculous, but I thought it was a good part of my delivery was that I could convey information quickly without stopping and new stuff would. But the woman who helped us, she basically turned around and said, the thing is you do cover a lot of ground, but we don't know what's important and what's not. And I think that was when I kind of stepped back and was going, well, neither do I really. So a lot of the time it was just the thoughts come to me. I'm nervous. So I just rail them off one by one. And that was a way of me. And there was over preparation too. So I'd have everything in front of me or I'd memorize stuff. And then I'd just sort of deliver as quickly as I could. And I think that was a lesson for me. Josie, what did you learn?
I had a vocal landscape problem as well.
It's like a support group.
So the thing that worked for me, she tried a lot of different things because I can speak quite monotonously. And one of them was pretending to conduct an orchestra.
Oh, wow.
And the other one was running on the spot, which neither of those really helped. But the one that helped was like gesturing. And like she said to like pretend you're basically like a stand-up comedian or like you're like trying to, that you're going to be applauded when you speak, because then you speak with a lot more confidence. And then everything else was also about managing nerves. So something that helped was focusing on your breath. And also she recommended filming yourself. And the one thing that helps for the podcast is taking fewer notes. I have felt very overwhelmed with everything on my page, and just like having one or two words for each point is really helpful. Now it's helped me a lot. And also focusing on how you can serve your audience rather than focusing on yourself, focusing on the listener. That's really helpful as well.
Definitely. All of that. And I think the point you made about like orchestra, it all felt quite performative. And I think that's what part of my reservation was. I said to the woman, I was like, I feel false. I feel like if I know that I'm putting on a performance, then it made me feel like there's something wrong with that. Like I should be my authentic self or whatever you want to say. And she was like, you just basically become a different version of yourself, a slightly different. It's not acting. It's just becoming a slightly different version of yourself. And that made me feel a little more comfortable. And it's a weird thing. Chris, our old manager, he once said that he used to smile massively before he started his introduction. And it was weird because in the research, I did see a lot of that. People listen to, I mean, it's famous in sports, isn't it? People listen to, you know, like songs that get them amped up, the Rocky of it all, you know, and they get amped up and they come with that focused mind. And I think there's all these little things you can do to help yourself build that confidence or get into a focused state before you go on stage, and it will massively eliminate stuff. Yeah. And even like Josie mentioned, almost not positive thinking, because that has this weird connotation of self-help books and so on and so forth. But I do think kind of my problem was I pictured myself collapsing, you know? So it was like on stage, I would be like, well, if I have to make this public speaking.
Why are you so dramatic? I don't like to perform, but also I didn't picture myself collapsing.
But I just mean, I typically would picture worst case scenarios.
Yeah,
you know?
And of course.
So I don't know if necessarily advocate positive speaking, like you're going to go up there and everyone's going to clap but definitely don't go in with the thought that you're going to fall. I thought like I would trip and, you know, all these things. And I think having a positive, also a realistic mindset, you know, in the sense of you're not going to, it's very, very unlikely that's going to happen. And if it did, people would be really sympathetic towards it. So it's not, I should stop talking about that.
There's one thing on LinkedIn Learning, someone said, prepare for bad things to happen. So if you fall on your way and have like a one-liner, like, oh, I've been practicing that for weeks or something.
Oh yeah.
And then you go in with confidence, because then if something does go wrong, you know how to recover from it. Yeah. And then the audience just trusts you to go on with what you're doing.
Yeah, that's such a good point.
I just pictured myself staying there.
The presentation's happening years from the corner. One of the best pieces of advice I've ever gotten in life was that, you, God, I'm using so much. It's so on my mind at the moment, was that you should, when you go into a room full of people you don't know, you should think about it's your job. Everyone's going to be feeling super uncomfortable as well as you. Like everyone feels really stressed about that. And there's very few people walk into a room and are like, everyone's going to love me. I don't know why they're Liza Minnelli, but.
She's doing jazz hands, so we're clear.
Gestures, very important for public speaking. To go in to those rooms and think it's your job to make everyone else feel comfortable. So then you stop thinking about yourself and start thinking about other people. And also curiosity and everything is really important for talking to other people and presenting to them and being able to listen to what you're saying and they're saying at the same time. So there was, and one of the points, I was getting overwhelmed with making a point, or we had to do this thing when we talked about a subject we cared about. And I was talking about the subject I cared about, but every time I'd get stuck because I was like, I don't know what the next sentence is going to be. And my brain's too busy thinking about the other sentence.
Yeah.
And I was told to ask myself little questions or like leave, as Josie said with her notes, like leave myself a little something like to jog my memory, but not a full blown paragraph that's going to overwhelm you. So I think that's another really good thing. But yeah, the big thing about going into a room and thinking it's your job to make everyone else feel comfortable, but not in a putting pressure on yourself way, but in terms of don't think about yourself so much.
This is quite a cynical thing to say, what I'm about to say, but I do feel that there's this imposter syndrome that people have. And the thing that helped me deal with imposter syndrome over the years was realizing that everyone else was an imposter. And what I mean by that is not so much like, oh, everyone's in the same boat. I mean that there's people who occupy massive stages on global stages and they don't have a clue what they're talking about. And you see it all the time. I mean, in politics, you see it in academia, where there's people and you sort of go, oh, wow, if they don't know what they're saying, I actually kind of do, you know, at least I'm prepared. And these people are really, really confident public speakers. They'll get up and speak about something they know nothing about. One thing coach at the London speech workshop did was she spoke on something. She told me to give her a topic and I gave her, I was kind of a bit of an idiot, but I gave her artificial intelligence just because it was on my mind. I was writing about it at the time. And she said, I don't know much about that, but I think then she delivered what was actually quite convincing. And it kind of demonstrated that it doesn't really matter what you're talking about. Yeah. That so much of our interpretation of public speaking comes down to conveyance and comes down to the inflection and intonation and so on.
Yeah, I was actually better on the topic I didn't know about because I didn't have time to get overwhelmed.
You must know loads about this topic then.
But yeah, so I had to do one on rugby and I don't watch rugby. I don't know anything about rugby. Yeah. And, the topic I'd chosen for myself was something I knew loads about, but I was just like, ugh. But I didn't have time to get overwhelmed about rugby. Well, so that's going to be a nice sound for the podcast listeners.
Enjoy that, everyone.
Apologies.
All right, so let's move on a little bit and talk about presentations in a more purposeful sense. So we're talking about general things there, and a lot of them are useful for podcasts in terms of intonation. We didn't talk about pauses, but that's probably more important for this subject. So advice for people giving presentations, or, you know, and that can be virtual, it can be in person, but our final question will deal specifically with in-person on stage stuff. Impression.
We should probably explain what a vocal landscape is, because I feel like we've talked about it a lot. It's really on my mind today. We should probably explain what a vocal landscape is, because I think we've talked about it a fair amount but not really got into what it is. But it's when, so we sort of alluded to it though, the monotony of, you know, when you just talk like with no ups and downs in your voice, but it's knowing where the ups and downs are supposed to come, which is really important. And one of the tasks that we would, I feel like I'm just talking about the London Speech Workshop so well, but it was so helpful. I cannot explain enough how helpful it was. Just in terms of changing your mindset and thinking about different things that you would never think about usually. And one of them was this. So we had to do this task where you were given a speech and you had to split it up into where you thought the important bits of the speech were, and then in which bits you would stress. And it was just so helpful in putting pauses in. We had to film ourselves reading it for the first time without doing that. And honestly, and then film ourselves once we had put all our pauses and our stresses in. And my video was about a minute longer, once I'd put all the pauses in and everything like that. And it just sounded so much better. So I just think it's about, changing your, making sure there's lots of interesting planning where you're going to put your words and thinking about it in terms of making it sound interesting as well as the content being interesting.
Yeah. It's like color, texture, and dimension, yes. They call it. And it's about putting life into your communications. And the one thing that sticks with me is that when you're reading like I was reading quickly and monotonously and blandly, it was making the reader, the listener do the work. So they had to find out what was the important information. They had to work harder, listen harder in whatever sense. And when you do the tonal landscape and you emphasize and stress the right words, it gives the reader what they need and it means you're doing the work and they can engage quite easily.
So a really good tip that I learned from LinkedIn Learning was, rather than trying to memorize your presentation verbatim, rather than doing that, you should talk about your presentation to friends and other people who obviously might not be in the audience, but that helps you remember the content of the presentation and helps you practice different ways of explaining things. And then it's very much more natural when you come to presenting rather than just reeling off a speech that might seem very like rehearsed, I guess. You actually have more of a natural ability to talk about it and you remember the main points. So that was a really good tip I heard about. And also another one was to match your pace, volume and speed to the audience and understanding being in the room with them. And if you're in the room, obviously not if you're doing a podcast, but if you're doing a presentation or an online presentation, understand who your audience is and maybe the mood of the audience as well when you're speaking.
Mm. Yeah. I think there's a UCLA study that said that people interpret public speakers based on the visual, the vocal and the verbal. So the visual is how we carry ourselves. And that the study suggested that 55% of our typical interpretation was that. So much of it is just how you carry yourself. And then 38% apparently was vocal. So that's how we sound. And the verbal was the words we use. So that was 7%. So it's interesting to think that only 7% of people's interpretation, according to this one study at least, was based on what you were saying. So I think like understanding where you exist, the room, the way you should come across a lot of the time is probably a lot more important than you imagine. So I guess when you're on a webinar, thinking about the tone of it and stuff like that would be super helpful because, I mean, we had a webinar recently on inclusive language that Etty did. And I thought tonally, she nailed it. She came in very supportively and like, it was inviting. And then there's other ones that are on like, you know, more serious topics in terms of charity sectors or poverty, inequality and things like that. And then to come in flippantly, or not that Etty was flippant, but to come in with a completely informal jokey tone can be seen as a bit, you know, sort of offensive. So I think understanding your audience, what they expect and the tone of the presentation is also important. And in terms of virtual ones, it's interesting because if 55% comes to the visual, that's almost eliminated in a lot of webinars. I mean, our webinars, for example, will be presentations on screen. And I suppose that's how you carry yourself at that time. So it does kind of suggest that you should put a lot of work into the visual elements of your presentations. But I suppose that's not really what we're talking about here. Laura, presentation?
Sounds good. So I was going to talk about eye contact because I think that's really stressful part of presentation sometimes. Yeah. And everyone's like, don't read from your cards or whatever. And they're right. That never looks good. Everyone, that's what they sound like. But actually eye contact, you don't have to do it for that long to make an impression. It can be just as simple as, I think there's a three second rule. So if you just do it for 3 seconds, you can go back down to your page and it's fine. So it's not as intense as you think it should be. And I'm sorry, Johan just stared at me without blinking. I don't mean that. That's terrifying. But yeah, so I think don't overthink it. I think the point that Josie made about explaining it to your friends is so good because I find that really helps with writing, is just talking to my friends about what I'm writing about, and it helps me distill what I'm talking about into one simple sentence because I've had to explain it down the pub and it makes it easy. So I think doing that with the presentation makes so much sense. So I think preparation is really key, but there's a difference between preparation and overthinking. I think there's also Carrie Fisher quote where she says like confidence comes after, that it's not actually the first step, it's like the last step.
Yeah,
she doesn't say that, but that's essentially the gist of I can't remember the quote off the top of my head basically, but look it up, Carrie Fisher on confidence, because it's very helpful. And I think that basically it's fake it till you make it, isn't it?
Yeah.
But preparation will inform that confidence, I think. And yes, split everything up into the right pauses.
Yeah, I actually think it's really important to mention another thing about confidence, which is the the thing we might be avoiding a little bit. And it's not avoiding, but ultimately to perform well with public speaking, the unfortunate truth is you have to do it. Yeah. And that's the one thing that I didn't like about it. Like, I know that I've got better at public speaking since doing these podcasts and the webinars, small ones that I've done. And I also know if I did go on a stage and give a public talk, I would research heavily because of fear. But also I know I'd get better at it, and I know it would become easier. So it's worth just throwing in there that if you really want to do it, I mean, there are places and spaces you can go to practice public speaking. I think it's called Toastmasters. They mentioned it in our public. I'm not going to go because of fear, but at the same time, I do think it is good if you can get yourself out there. I don't speak for all of us, but I speak for myself when I say that in doing these podcasts now, I find them so much less anxiety inducing. Mm-hmm. The first one I did, I remember kind of being like, taking deep breaths, and it was virtual. You know, I mean, we're in the office together now, but it was just virtual, and I was so terrified of it. And now you realize, like, I suppose that it's never going to be that bad, and it's always going to be quite, and then by the end of it, now I quite enjoy doing them. It's always a fun bit of the day, really.
That's, sorry to jump in, but that's such a good point. And I think you can practice in lots of different ways, though. I think you can practice by hosting your meeting in your office, volunteering to do that. You can practice by talking to people down the supermarket. Like, I mean, don't mean random people, but I mean, like, not going to the self-service checkout.
Wait, you say you don't mean random people, do you mean, are you going to arrange to meet your friends?
No. I do mean random people then. You're right. I do mean random people.
I mean, that's a good idea, but stick with it.
Okay. I need to have more confidence in that idea. No, there's a really good video. It's from years ago by Carrie Hope Fletcher it's called How to Be Confident. And it just made me realize that everyone's in their own head about being confident. Well, most people are. And also that, one of the things that she said that she did is just, you know, go around saying hello to more people, and it really helped her. And I was like, that's such a good point, especially in an age of self-service checkouts, basically.
Yeah, and putting yourself out there in any way, you know, I think it always helps you.
I just thoroughly agree with, I think it's practicing, and the more you do it, the easier it will be. Sorry, just reinforced your point.
Yeah, and also with the great supermarket point. So thank God we have that.
This is, so, you know, just don't do what I say.
Just get over to Josie. Let's get away from Laura for a bit.
Do as I say, not as I do.
Go on, Josie.
In terms of practicing, there was another good tip I got from LinkedIn Learning. To practice, if you naturally get nervous when you're speaking, practice when you have a high heart rate. So for example, after exercising. So you're practicing calming yourself down while you're talking and delivering your speech. So I thought I'd just throw that in.
That's so good.
That's really good. I think we may have watched the same thing. Because this brings me to the third question, which I think is an important one, in-person delivery. So what things can you do? And I think that was one of the ones I watched when it was like public speaking, we're talking stage. So one of the things was, and to do that, you can just like run on the spot and then, or do jumping jacks. We call them star jumps. It was an American who said star jumps. They call them jumping jacks, but nonetheless. So yeah, and then once you've done your jumping jacks or star jumps, depending on your geographical location, then just try and practice your speech. And I think practice is probably the most important element of that. Anyone want to talk about practice, in-person practice, or anything in-person wise?
Something that I heard is you should go to the location ahead of time to practice and get a sense of the space. Think about where you're going to stand, where you're going to walk around, where you're going to put your water. Just understand what the space is like. And if you have the opportunity, then practice in that space.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And stuff like walking on the stage as well. Like this is one thing probably the same LinkedIn Learning course, but walking on the stage back and forth and then landing in the middle. The woman did it in the course, and I watched her and I was like, I've seen so many people do that and I never realized that they were doing it. So what you do is you walk to the right, Then you walk all the way back across to the left and you make eye contact. And then you walk in middle and land there. And it's like a completion.
Yeah.
And you're kind of like, yeah. And I was kind of going, you see politicians do it all the time, you know.
It's like every time you make a point, you start in one place, then you make a point as you're moving, then you go to the second place.
Yeah, I feel like that's too complicated. Yeah.
That's adjacent to the spoons trick, though, isn't it? Of landing your point before you move on to the next one.
What was the spoon trick?
Well, the spoons trick was you have your topic that you want to talk about and you have a handful of spoons. I haven't made this up. You have a handful of spoons and as you feel like you're landing your point, you know, there might be multiple points within your general presentation. As you feel like you're landing your point, handing the thought over. So you hand your spoon over to the person that you're talking to.
Yeah.
Obviously don't take spoons to your presentation actually, but it's good for practice.
You can throw the spoons at the audience.
I guess it's just a version of that. So you walk to your point, hand it over, walk to the next point.
It's very hard to think about though, conceptually, isn't it? Like I think with the spoon stuff, I mean, me and Laura spoke about this, but we struggled with the actual delivery. I mean, you get used to it, but she did an example of it and I was like, she's nailing this. And we were like, here is a spoon that I am handing you. It's a really good tip though. It really did work. I think another thing worth mentioning is the physical elements. So one is getting in the zone. It's interesting because like in sport, we would happily do that. So before a football game, everyone kind of amps each other up or, you know, you sort of, I remember like taking deep breaths and getting ready and I'm like, it's about to begin. And then the moment almost before the whistle when you're ready. And it's all about getting into focus and loads of sports people obviously swear by listening to particular music before a game. And I think just apply that to just before you're going to get on stage. And I think that's fine. Taking deep breaths as well, centering yourself is a really good thing to do. And the final thing is just to actually take care of yourself physically in terms of drink loads of water prior to the event. Ensure that your vocal cords are lubricated, as it were. And then avoid caffeine was an interesting thing because I can't remember why, but I think it's because it inauthentically ups your heart rate or something like that. So it gives you a sort of, it can almost, I guess, tilt your balance in a way. And then the other thing was avoid dip milk and dairy because it gets caught in your...
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
West End stars do that.
What, avoid milk or dairy? Yeah,
before they go on.
So loads of little things like that. I think the eye contact stuff was quite interesting too, because it was make eye contact before you start speaking. And another part was because you want to look at your whole audience in person, it was divide it up into sort of, it's easy if you're in like a horseshoe sort of environment, you can divide it up to the three and then just pick a person or two people in each of the sections. And when you address them, do it like that. It's weird with the eye contact because I, in any instances where I have done public speaking, I always thought that eye contact thing was strange, but you just naturally do it. You pick one person and I never thought that I was doing it, but I've realized when I'm doing it, I'm like, why do I keep staring at this one person? But yeah, so I think all these things are quite lasting and definitely worth doing.
Yeah. I think another thing I heard was to have your speech and your body and your tone all in alignment, which is less of like a tip. It's more of an overall thing to be aware of. Because the person said that you want everything to tell the same story because that builds credibility when you're talking. And another thing is to be aware of your facial expressions. Mm. Someone said to put Vaseline on your teeth, which I don't like the sound of. But I suppose some people do that. And look at friendly faces as well rather than hostile faces when you're making eye contact with people. Mm. And
did it explain why you should put Vaseline on your teeth?
It's to like... smile, like,
you don't want to close your mouth?
Yeah, to have like a...
So
I think people do it in like...
Why not poison yourself?
Yeah, I don't like the sound of it. But people do it for beauty pageants and stuff.
Oh,
like
I see. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So the advice for today is put Vaseline in your teeth, go to your local supermarket and just speak to people.
And another thing was just, I think I had the speech training and I'm still learning how to actually... do it. That it's one thing to know the tips and then it's another thing to actually practice it. One thing that the lady recommended was filming yourself at home speaking, which is quite uncomfortable, I think. But it's something that helps you get more comfortable. And also to do one step at a time when you're practicing. Don't expect to just like become an incredible public speaker.
100%. Yeah.
But just like, what's your priority? Do one thing at a time, and then over time you'll improve.
Yeah. As usual, Josie's got the most insightful point of all time. But yeah,
Vaseline on the team. Yeah. I think, Laura?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I think one final thing was like, it's kind of cliche, but it was have fun. And if you can, try and get to a point where you're comfortable enough to be more of yourself. So I think one thing that's really kind of unfortunate is people feel that they should be a certain way when they're speaking publicly. That's usually formal. Like it's professional, it's on stage, it's conveying information in a way that's, you know, the example is like boardroom or, you know, town hall meetings where it's like, here's the quarter. And, you know, and the truth is, it's just not engaging, that form of public speaking. Most public speaking actually isn't. And the way you know it is when you see someone who's actually charismatic on stage, making jokes and delivering the information in a way that's engaging, then you realize how bad everyone else is in a weird way. Not to condemn every public speaker, but so many people go and they feel that they just need to be professional, convey the information, but just, I think, take it a bit. Maybe, I mean, the way I've kind of learned on these podcasts, as I'm sure you've realized, is that if you have a bit of fun with it, it just really lowers the pressure and you can still convey the information. You can still give the tips, but it just means being not taking yourself as seriously, making jokes if you want to, and just kind of having a bit more fun with it, I think is important. Yeah.
Agreed.
Any other final tips?
No,
we've completely solved it. All right, well, that's all we have time for. So thank you to Josie.
Thank you.
Thank you to Laura.
Thank you.
Our next podcast will be on web accessibility, and that's on the 3rd of October. So thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. We hope you enjoyed this Charity Digital podcast. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of Charity Digital. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. Thanks for listening.